The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
It's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we move into a Wednesday, Gary, how the heck are you?
Well, before we get to the important news of the day, yeah, let's play this audio cut from Michelle Obama as she compares Trump to...
We come from a broken family. We're a teenager. We're, you know, we're a little unsettled and, you know, having good parents, you know, is tough. You know, sometimes you spend weekends with divorced dad and that feels like it's fun, but then you get sick. That's what America's going through. We're kind of... living with divorced dad.
Didn't her husband's parents get divorced?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. Just asking questions.
Well, it brought me to this question. Was she including in that a divorced gay man? Could a Republican say the same thing and have compared Hillary Clinton or voting for Elizabeth Warren or voting for Kamala Harris as voting for a divorced mom? Would that be acceptable?
Right, because, in our culture today, when you say single mom... You know, most people think, okay, hard worker, right?
Yes.
So imagine she had said single mom. It's kind of like that. We're living kind of like a kid living with a single mom right now. If it were a female president in office and a Republican said that, goodbye, Republican. I mean,
goodbye, Republican.
Yeah, you'd have to step down.
Yes. Well, no, Michelle's not running for anything.
No.
Even though she was talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Democrats
grooming her. I heard that over the weekend.
Yeah, grooming her to run for the presidency.
Grooming her. Okay. Mm-hmm. Divorced dad. So for dads out there.
Well, what she actually is doing is complaining about apparently how her husband was raised then.
Mm-hmm. First thing I thought of. His parents were divorced.
This is just too much fun.
Yeah, too easy. It really is. Karate.
And I'm telling you, we're going to have some fun because one of our great listeners, last week, when Gerald Nadler on the House Judiciary Committee was using his gavel all the time.
Yeah.
And I believe it was when he was using it for Candace Owen.
Yeah.
When he wasn't listening to what she was saying, the conservative activist. When she was saying, you know, that Democrats believe that black people are stupid.
Yeah.
By the way, where did that, liberals and black, whoever said that before? Oh, yeah, it was us. But when she said it, he hit his gavel and said, "You will not call any member of this body," I'm paraphrasing here, "stupid." She looked at him like, "What are you talking about?" And she had to say, "I didn't say that."
Yeah, you're not listening.
You're not listening. And he just, like, threw up his hands like, "I don't know," but he was hitting his gavel. And we said, we should have a gavel.
We need a gavel.
You ready?
All right, hold on.
Here we go.
Yeah, this isn't going to be annoying. Thank you, Sandra.
Sandra sent us gavels. We now have the official Red Eye gavel.
We have gavels.
The official Gerald Nadler Red Eye gavel.
Here's blah, 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 blah.
Here's the thing. The only thing that we could possibly even come close to qualifying for that requires a gavel is auctioneer. That's it. Order.
Order in the court.
Yeah.
But
so there you go. Thank you, Sandra. Thank you.
We'll keep them in this. We're not going to use them all the time because
it gets annoying.
We might, if if we didn't use some self-control, it might get very, very annoying very, very quick.
It gets annoying anyway. We don't need to add gaveling to every show. However, they will come in handy. See, like Supreme Court, when the Supreme Court is handing down rulings.
Or next time the House Judiciary Committee meets. I was telling Eric, maybe we should be limited to using the gavels once a month. How does that sound?
Okay.
It's only 12 times a year, once, because then people look forward to it. We can start out
Man,
the show.
Man, I can't wait till those guys gavel again.
We can start out the show saying, coming up on the show today, we will gavel Cory Booker.
Yeah. Yeah, we will.
All right, but they're very nice gavels, too.
They're very nice.
I've never had...
It's very thoughtful, and thank you, Sandra.
Yes, I've never had a gavel.
I haven't either. I've never warranted needing a gavel or earned having a gavel.
I've never... Well, yeah, that's a great point. I've never had a reason to it, but I've never earned a gavel until now.
Yeah.
There we go. So there you go.
And thank you. Thank you, Sandra.
And it has a little, you know, what do they call the gavel base?
I don't know. The strike, the plate, the I don't know.
Gavel. Well, that, I was amazed.
I don't know what it is.
Oh, I didn't know you get a plate with a gavel,
yeah.
too.
Oh, yeah. You got to have one. But see, when it's on a bench, though, they sound louder, right? Because the bench is kind of, you know, the wood of the judge's bench is echoing,
it's like a speaker.
Yeah.
You've got a speaker cabinet.
Yeah.
In a speaker cabinet, you've got the huge... the huge box with the air inside, which helps the resonance, except for the new technology that they have where you don't need the big speaker cabinets anymore. And I don't know how Bose and other companies do it, but they do. Yeah. Can you still get the big speakers? They still exist?
They exist for, especially for people in bands.
In back, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
So there you go. We've got our gavels. We will put them away now. I need to put mine away. Or just put it out of my reach.
Yeah.
Because I will have the urge.
Brian is posting them on eBay right now.
Well, he just came in during our...
And took a picture.
Our segment and took a
picture. Yeah, he's posting them on eBay.
While we... Yeah. When we were just on the air here, or while we've been on the air, he just came in and took a picture of it, so... All right, coming up on the show today, Bernie looking better in some polls as the left starts hitting him on being a millionaire. I really need to... I can't. I would say I want to gavel Buttigieg after some of his interviews over the last day.
Let's pace ourselves.
I know.
We have a long contract. We're going to be here a while.
We are. That's true. We have a long contract.
Yeah. Let's not get into the gaveling frenzy.
Yeah, we have to be careful because in our next contract there may be a gavel ban. What would be justifiable cause for firing the guys? Overuse of the gavel.
Yeah.
But I'm already sick and tired of the media coverage, the mainstream media coverage of Mayor Pete Buttigieg. They call him refreshing and intelligent. You know why? He has found a new way. You heard me listen to the audio cut during the pre-show meeting. I'm just over here. I probably used the gavel a couple of times. That's what we'll do. We use a gavel in our pre-show meeting. That way we won't irritate anybody but ourselves. But he has found a new way to say nothing. That's why he's refreshing and intelligent. He's just found a new way to... His comments on the economy were just ridiculous. That he's trying to separate capitalism from a democracy. And stating that, well, capitalism is not necessarily a democracy. There is no economic system as democratic as capitalism. End of story.
Right.
Because any other economic system, somebody is telling you what to do with your private property.
Right.
I mean, I'm sorry, Buttigieg, since the left has determined, because we talked about this last week, the big question on the left is Pete Buttigieg sufficiently gay?
Hmm.
That was the question the left was asking.
Right.
is he genuinely gay enough to run for president as a white male? Because the legitimate gay part of him must supersede the white male, must defeat the white male portion of him. And apparently the mainstream media has come to the decision that it has.
Right.
Remember, they're all about identity politics. Mm-hmm. So the white male was bad. So it was like, okay, do we promote that he was gay? And there were a number of, we talked about a number of interviews where he was talking about it, but the interviewer never brought it up. He was trying to bring up the fact that he was gay, and the interviewers weren't doing it, and it was noticed.
Yeah.
But so we'll get to that, because he has found new ways to say absolutely nothing. But they try. He's being promoted as this is the intelligent guy. This is the Midwest intelligent guy who is far above anybody else out there. He's not. He's an intellectual lightweight.
Well, and it's...
He's easy to tear apart.
This idea that, it's kind of the same euphoria that they saw for Obama, but in a different kind of way. They're trying to make it more of a intellectual discussion where it is mainstream. Obama wasn't, remember, from the 2004, going back to the 2004 DNC speech that Obama gave. That wasn't really about trying to make him centered or anything else. I know the left tried to do that a little bit during the primary of 2008, but that didn't really work. With Buttigieg, you saw a couple of stories over the past couple of weeks where he's getting praise even from conservatives, and it was like they mentioned Ben Shapiro in our colleague in that article. And Rush Limbaugh in some comments. The liberal media sometimes takes liberties and really stretches them, really goes a little far with trying to define someone. And this is exactly what they're trying to do. They're trying to define someone here who, you know, this guy is common sense. He's thoughtful. He's intelligent. And okay, but what is he actually saying is the question.
No, his lies are just given to you in a softer tone.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly what we saw with Obama.
And an imagery of, well, I'm pondering and I'm thinking. Well, it doesn't matter. We don't care. We don't care whether you scream it or whether you say it in a soft tone.
Right.
Or whether you sit back and sigh and fold your arms and try to do it in a serious, more intelligent way. If it's BS, it's BS. The tone doesn't matter.
Right.
So we'll get to that. The GOP demands the Justice Department release documents on Hillary and the email scandal. Here we go again. U.S. manufacturing flat in March. It was a weak first quarter. We'll have details on that. Mueller report to be released on Thursday. That's tomorrow. States banning powdered alcohol. Wow. Just wonder how that works. O'Rourke declines to sign the pledge barring fossil fuel campaign money. Yeah, he's going to take fossil fuel money, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
New Mexico is the latest state to approve the national popular vote. Plus, your calls and comments. The rest of the show will be gavel-free.
I don't know about that.
I was tempted.
I don't know about that.
Next year,
order.
Next year I'll have
order.
To get, by next year at this time, I'll have to give up the gavel for Lent.
Could be.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley. Let's go to Don in Kansas City about Michelle Obama and her comment on divorced dads and Trump. Hi, Don. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome.
Good evening, guys. How are you?
Real good. What's up?
Hey, I had a different take on it, and I'm not sure if I misunderstood you or not. But to me, it seemed like she was once again slamming guys by saying, you go to your dad's house on the weekend, and if you get sick, you don't want to be there because dad's incompetent and can't take care of you, and it's just no fun, or, you're not getting taken care of.
Right,
well,
yeah.
And that's why I asked, does that also apply to gay divorced dads?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, that's specifically why. I have a 13-year-old daughter, and I guarantee she would rather be at dad's house than at mom's, because she gets her medicine on time every time. She gets taken care of, and, you know, I do my best to take care of her. So I was a little offended by what she said, because that's the way I took it.
Well, as you know, look, people should be treated as individuals, and she's doing, again, what the left does, and that's stereotype.
Right.
That's why we said, and we were on, by the way, we're on the same track as you are. That's why we said, could you say the same thing if somebody said that about Hillary Clinton and compared a Hillary Clinton or a Kamala Harris or a Elizabeth Warren to a divorced mom and made the same kind of insulting comments, would that be accepted? And, of course, it would not be accepted.
Right. You had how many different commercial campaigns over the last, I don't know, decade or so? You know, dad's at home with the kids, doesn't know what to do for dinner. Oh, no, you're not coming home, honey? What do I do? There's one where he just ends up putting a bunch of cheese on crackers or something. And I'm like, really? Really? This is, you know, and it's done tongue in cheek. But there are plenty of dads, whether they're divorced or not, that can handle themselves in the kitchen and have no problem whatsoever caring for their kids and or eight grandchildren.
Ooh, me man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Me man.
I can't do it. I don't even know how to work the phone to order pizza.
Only can use gavel.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, there's listeners tweeted out, these are sound blocks.
Yeah. Sound blocks, yeah.
That's what they're called.
Yeah,
sorry.
And our audience will be sound blocking us if we keep using our gavels.
Me man. Ugh. Gavel.
Yeah. Right.
Hunting. Gavel.
It is a bit Stone Age, isn't it?
Sports.
Quiet. And the way to make sure that everybody is quiet is to make as much noise as possible. Banging on a piece of wood. Wait, maybe all those commercials were right. I take it back. Yeah, it's
no. She got. I mean, she got hit even from the left on that. She mm-hmm. got hit.
Right. Well, because it's a thoughtless comment. It really is. I mean, think about all the divorced dads out there that might be considering her on the left, considering a vote for her in the future.
Oh yeah, there's dozens of them.
Yeah,
nationwide.
Well, actually. Most marriages, what do they say, 50, roughly 50%?
50% of marriages, yeah.
So there's tens of millions of them.
Yeah.
You know? And so.
Well, no. I meant willing to vote for her. That's where the dozens came from.
Oh, I don't know.
No, I understand that there's more than dozens of divorces.
I think for liberals, I think there would be millions. Here's your forecast.
There is the potential for some severe weather today in the southern plains, and this could be really a pounding event for Oklahoma and portions of central and southern Texas right through the middle of the state. In the summertime, you get a lot of the thunderstorms that punch up into real high layers of the atmosphere and produce explosive thunderclouds. But with this type of system, what we're looking at is cold air from the north wrapping around out of Canada and spilling into warm, moist air coming in from the Gulf. With that setup, you get the clash of air masses and a lot of instability creating the severe weather. We saw the same thing this past weekend in the deep south. Warm air from the south wrapping around in with the colder air from the north, and the result were some damaging tornadoes. In fact, 8 people lost their lives this past weekend in tornadoes that went through the deep south. We'll be watching this one, part of your national weather forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Your forecast made possible by Travel Centers of America.
You're listening to Red Eye Radio from the Pilot Flying J Studios.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. I just love the headline on Fox. Trump predicts crazy Bernie Sanders and sleepy Joe Biden will be the two Dem finalists in the 2020 race. So he already has the nickname.
Yeah.
Crazy Bernie Sanders, sleepy Joe Biden. And you know he did that.
Right.
Last time, he's well known for his nickname. So here we go.
Yeah, well, and it's not much of a prediction if the polls hold where they are. Yeah, that's the way it's going to play out. We'll see if Biden actually can keep those numbers or if Bernie can keep his numbers. Bernie may surge with Democrats. Here's what's interesting. You know, Bernie had that surge in 2016 as the primary went, you know, headed out west. He started doing really, really well. And of course, we know now from the DNC emails that were leaked that was never meant to be. I don't know that does the DNC protect a Joe Biden? You know, I'm wondering again, just what the 2020 season really has in store, because anything really is up in the air. Bernie could surge and Biden could fall, or they both could fall and Buttigieg all of a sudden is the guy.
Well, you and I had asked the question when the Emerson poll came out yesterday.
Mm.
And we said, look, is this an outlier?
Right.
You know, is this an outlier? Is this an accurate representation? Is Biden surging? And then the morning consult poll came out yesterday of registered voters. Okay, registered Democrat voters. Not likely voters, but registered. And Biden still in lead. 31, Sanders 23, O'Rourke 8, Harris 9, Warren 7, Buttigieg 7, Booker 4, Klobuchar 2. Now see in this poll, Julian Castro down to 1.
Mm.
Remember, he had surged to 3 in the Emerson.
Mm-hmm.
In the morning consult poll, 1. Yang also 1. The rest 1 or below. So Biden still holds that lead. And, Buttigieg had 9 in the Emerson poll. But when you see the morning consult poll, he's back to where he's basically been, which is, you know, 5, 6, 7.
Right.
He's back to 7 again. So you're going to have those polls once in a while that comes out and does that. And the Emerson poll seems to be the one that is the outlier here, because the vast majority of the other polls have all shown Biden in the lead. And so Biden still remains in the lead, which makes me wonder that if he does announce, when he will announce. And this will be interesting, because there doesn't seem to be any time. Have you heard a timeline? I haven't heard a timeline of Biden stating when he may announce.
No, you know, no. It was expected before the whole Creepygate thing, Creepygate week. They had said that it would happen, you know, likely within a few weeks. I don't know what would be considered good timing for him, you know, in terms of an announcement, because you have 20, including him, or is it 21 now, including him?
I would be 20, including
him. Yeah, all right. So you have 20. Is there a great expectation that anyone else is going to jump in?
Hillary?
Of note. I don't think she's getting in, but... Yeah, I guess we couldn't fully discount Hillary, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Neither do I, but I mean...
Cuomo, probably not. Governor Cuomo, I don't know about Chris. Maybe Chris jumps in. But then the former mayor of New York, Bloomberg, and the thought is that if Joe's in, he's not in.
Right.
That he would only consider getting in if Joe is not in. So... I don't know. Do you let the smoke clear from all the other stuff? Do you let the Buttigieg stuff kind of pan out and that candle burn out a little bit? Or do you jump out right now and steal some of that media attention that the rest of them are getting. You know, I'm not sure what the tactic would be, but I don't think he waits too much longer.
And when you see Rasmussen has the president's job approval, 52-48.
Yeah, right.
Now you look at the job approval from Emerson, 49-43. Mm. Disapproved 49, approved 43.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're talking about a 10-point swing.
Right.
Somebody's wrong.
Yeah, right. Well, and we talked about the polling the other day in a general election, this being Trump versus Bernie, and the president was at 47%, Bernie was at 44%. And we broke it down into the psychology, I guess, of answering any pollster when it comes to this particular president. Keep in mind, people are very aware right now that if you wear a MAGA shirt or hat out in public, then someone is going to confront you. How much of that effect is in play with the pollsters right now? I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know that it can be measured, and again, until, I guess, Election Day, and it will change between now and Election Day likely.
Well, and we look on a day like today when there honestly isn't a lot of news, it's fun to look at the polls.
Right.
But you really don't have a clue on the polls until you get roughly 3 weeks out from an election.
Yeah.
You really don't. I mean, that's when you see the polls. And anybody who knows we have fun with the polls, you know, discussing them. Yesterday, we were looking at the polls and seeing who was polling at 1% to 3% a year and a half out, who actually got close or won the presidency. And Bill Clinton is one of them. Mm-hmm. That did. Jimmy Carter is one that did. So just because you're polling extremely low, especially in Democrat primary fields in the past, doesn't mean that you can't win the actual nomination. So, but you really get a clue as to the war the polls are. Maybe in a particular state in a primary a week out. And the presidential, we have seen that normally 3 to 4 of the polling services out there, all likely voters, by the way, of all maybe the 10 to 15 pollsters that exist out there, by the time you get to the last 3 to 4 weeks is when you see 3 or 4 of those polls, when you look at it after the election is over, that are almost dead on.
Yeah, right.
And that's what we saw last time. You know, for example, we still get the calls, well, the pollsters were completely wrong in the last election. No, they weren't. You had some polls that were dead on as to the popular vote. Now, being able to determine that popular vote would be different by tens of thousands in particular states, you had some of the internal polling that showed that.
Right.
You didn't. The public polling didn't show that. They might have had that but didn't release it. But the internal polling showed that because the Hillary campaign, starting about 2 weeks out, was starting to get very, very nervous because they saw the polls tightening up in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan.
Yeah,
that point. So they were able to, the internal polling was able to pick it up. But as to the electoral count, the polls don't do that. They do the popular vote.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, too, if you look at the RCP average of Biden being essentially right now plus 9.3, where it stands right now on the RCP average. I think there's a case to be made that, A, his energy isn't what it once was, but B, even if it were, that I don't know that it's enough to carry him to nomination given the splitting of the party. I really don't know. I'm not doubting whether it is. I just question whether it is. You know, we'll only know, you know, next year when we get to that point, summer of 2020, closer to the convention. But because there are, I think there's something you can't discount. it was what was different in the past about young voters and the Democratic Party was that it was, celebrities and others that were kind of part of that young movement, right? That and the rank and file that were part of the young movement. The young movement right now, the young far left, has representation. AOC, Omar,
well,
these individuals, and they represent that group in a different way. They don't care about Feinstein. They don't care about the old left. They don't care about the old party. And I wonder if a Biden can carry that energy all the way to the convention.
Well, you know, when Nancy Pelosi, and this is really important, if you want to understand the split in the Democrat Party right now, Nancy Pelosi over the last 48 hours, pounding the fact we are not socialist.
Right.
We are not so. This is not the party of socialism. It isn't the party. She's been taking shots at AOC almost every single day over the last week. These, you know, small innuendo shots that the media, that the mainstream media has picked up against it. The leadership is scared to death because we talked about Nancy Pelosi stating there's only five, but has been brought up. There's a contingent. There is a consistent group of 70 members of Congress that consistently vote with AOC.
Right.
And support everything that she does. And so there is this fight within the Democrat Party, the leadership. And I'm talking about the Pelosi's, the Schumer's, and those that they represent who do fear her. They fear her, but they fear that she will take the party in the wrong direction and they will lose. I don't think they fear her ideology. I think they actually believe in a lot of what she believes. They just know they can't promote it the way that she's promoting it. Otherwise, they don't believe they can win.
Right. And you try and factor that into the whole Biden thing. And look, Biden is very good at overgeneralizing, I guess, and being dismissive of things that might be a hurdle for him. CBS Morning News, which was a couple of weeks ago before Creepygate Week. They interviewed him, and one of the questions that came up, well, you know, people are, you know, ask about your age, and he's, you know, oh, no. I'm doing great. I'm, you know, just, you know, look at me out on the campaign trail. Look at me out when I'm in public and blah, blah, blah. No, everything's fine. I understand why people are concerned, but everything's great. He's very good at being dismissive and overgeneralizing things. The question is that enough to connect with the far left young base right now that doesn't care about Nancy, that, as you just point out, is in a battle with Nancy and Feinstein and the rest of them? Can they pull that together to make it, to energize a Biden campaign?
Well, here's the question. Can they unite a little over a year from now at the DNC?
Right. Is there, does that possibility exist, or is it off the table?
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Coming up following the top of the hour, U.S. manufacturing flat in March. Manufacturing for the first quarter, weak.
Yeah.
Not surprising. Overall industrial output fell 0.3% in the first quarter from last year. One of the things we're just talking about now is, can the DNC ever unify around one particular candidate? You know, AOC coming out earlier this week and stating, you know, Bernie's really not the guy. So could they ever unite around Biden isn't the guy. So could they ever unite around Biden? If the election were held today, the Republican Party would unite around Trump.
Yeah. Yeah.
They would unite around Trump.
Yes.
Can't say the same thing. Again, it's unfair to say that, though, because you're comparing apples and oranges because you're very early on in the primary season. But I'm talking about just the mindset of Democrats right now. And I just don't know what candidate they would all embrace. Maybe they would a Bernie Sanders. I don't know. But I don't know. There is more of a split in the Democrats than I have seen. I can't remember when the split's been so great.
Right.
I cannot remember. I'm thinking back in my memory of covering politics. I don't remember it being this great since I've been covering it.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot.
I won't hit my gavel.
Order.
I didn't finish my thought. I realized I didn't finish my thought.
Mm-hmm.
That isn't a frequent happening, is it? Mm. But I didn't finish my thought last hour when I was talking about, the question for the Democrats is, can you be united when it comes to the DNC next year? For the Republicans, they're united right now. The biggest problem that I believe that the Republican Party has right now and the president has right now is the president's own words. The president still remains his own worst enemy. And I'll give you an example. American manufacturing flat in March. This is according to the Fed, reported on Tuesday. The weak performance has contributed to fears about a slowing U.S. economy as fuel from the late 2016 tax cuts faded, and the auto industry continues to struggle. It also dragged overall industrial production down slightly. In the month, manufacturing fell 1.1% in the first 3 months of the year compared to the same period in 2018, the Fed reported. However, output in March was still 1% higher than a year earlier. The other point that you brought up during our top of the hour mid-show meeting,
mm-hmm,
was that trucking also, the shipping, what they shipped last fall and into the first quarter, is also down.
Yeah, they started seeing trucking industry started seeing the sector a slip at the end of 2018. It's continued into and through the first quarter here. And, again, where is the relief and what is behind that? We saw the same kind of slippage back in 2014 and 15 into 16 when you had factory orders drop. And at that point, it was the fluctuation in the value of the U.S. dollar. Right now, what's going on to a large extent is tariffs. The cost of raw materials is impacting the factory orders. And when factory orders are down, that's going to affect transportation. That's going to affect the movement of those goods. And so, we'll see, I guess, what the administration does. You're talking about a $700 billion sector that is feeling the pain and drivers getting fewer miles, which means they're taking home fewer dollars.
And the reason I say this is a problem that the president can solve because he created it, it goes beyond just getting the trade deals that he says he is close to getting with China and that he has gotten with Mexico and Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And we highlighted another problem last month when the president came, or not last week, when the president came out and said, well, I'm not going to close the border now, but in a year, if we don't get what we want, we're going to put tariffs on automobiles. Well, that would go against the new trade deal that he just signed.
Right.
That he signed with Canada and Mexico. That would go against the new NAFTA.
Yeah, right.
And so it doesn't... The problem is that when you sign trade deals, the participants in those trade deals have to understand and believe that you will uphold your bargain.
Yes.
That you signed this deal, and the president just has no problem coming out and stating we signed the deal and then saying, but I'm not going to uphold the deal next year if I don't get what I want, which is something which is outside what we've already agreed to. And so it doesn't matter whether you have the deal or not. It's whether your trading partners have any confidence that you will uphold your end of the bargain, what you have agreed to in writing.
Mm-hmm.
And the president is showing, number one, when he came out, remember when he said, when we sign the Mexico and Canada agreement, I will drop the steel and I will drop the aluminum tariffs, and he hasn't. Well, they're not happy because of it. And so you have Mexico, you have Canada, and you probably now have China and Europe and even parts of Asia that are involved in coming up with free trade agreements that don't trust the president's word. Because what he says one day is not what he says the next day. And once he signs a deal, then he'll be the first to proclaim, I am not going to uphold that deal if I don't like what I see next year. On another topic that is unrelated to what I've already signed, you know, we've already signed as an agreement. Right. You can't do that in trade. And even if he gets the China free trade agreement, if there is an understanding of the countries that signed free trade agreements with it, that under this president, he will not uphold what he has agreed to, that's a problem.
Well, and beyond that, I mean, here domestically, if the understanding is, or I guess if there is a lack of trust by the farming sector, we've talked about this before, but if you have numbers dropping in Iowa, which is happening to some extent, you have basically all over the Corn Belt, all over the farming belt, you have his support waning. Because we talked about you have to repair what they've gone through up until now. And then you have to restore confidence and restore the trade. Restoring the trade is one thing. Restoring long-term confidence that it won't happen again is another.
And that's because people, countries, and industries wish to go into supply chains that they have confidence in over the long term. And that's the critical thing. The farmers talked about it. Look, it took us, they said, 20 years, 30 years to get into the supply chain.
Right.
Now we're out of the supply chain. Mm-hmm. And even if we go back in, will our trading partners believe that this president will abide by the deal that he signed?
Right. And will the voters in the farming belt believe that he will not do this again over the next 4 years? That's what they're going to count on. Not just that they get a deal restored by election time, that it won't happen again in his second term. He has to convince them that that part of it is over, signed, sealed, delivered, and there won't be any movement on tariffs again.
By the way, I want to mention an email that I got last week from a gentleman who was like, see, you were completely wrong on tariffs. The steel industry is doing great. I said, well, you didn't listen to what we said.
That's who it was designed to protect.
It was designed, if you put in tariffs, it was designed to protect the steel industry. Mm-hmm. Who gets hurt are people that use steel in manufacturing, steel and aluminum manufacturing, because their prices go up. Yes, you can protect an industry, but when you protect an industry, you raise the cost of that. And so anybody who uses those goods, they are the ones who suffer because their price goes up.
Right.
It's like, wow, we haven't been clear on that over the thousands of times that we have talked about tariffs and increasing the government artificially increasing the cost of goods. So that's the problem. That's the biggest problem. I believe the Democrats are so bad that this president can go in and not be at the top of his game and still win. I start losing that confidence if the economy a year from now is flat.
Right. If these items aren't corrected, then you're going to have an issue.
Yep.
You're going to have an issue going into fourth quarter, and I don't know that you can fix it and turn it around in 2020 fast enough. That's the problem, is that right now you should be working to that end and have it done by the end of the second quarter so that the planning, the investment by manufacturers is robust.
Then you have to instill confidence, and I don't know how you do that. That I will abide by the agreements that I make with these countries.
Right.
Because it doesn't matter whether you sign the trade deals if those countries believe you will not, and the farmers and the industries in the United States, which are American citizens, don't believe that you will fulfill your end of the bargain.
Right.
That's a problem that the president, I believe, has to solve in order to ensure that he wins. I still think it's his election to lose. But there are some decisions and some proclamations and some confidence building he alone is in charge of presenting not only to the American people, but trade partners that he agrees, that he actually signs and agrees to do trade deals with.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's, again, it's one of his few weak points, but it's his major weak point. And it's fixable.
Well, yeah, it's a major weak point because the economy is everything for a Republican winning.
And it's something he can control. The administration can instill the confidence.
Right. He controls that completely. Nobody else can do that from him. Nobody else can take it from him, but nobody else can give it to him.
Right.
That's all on him. He alone can solve that problem.
Yep.
We shall see. But again, not looking good for the first quarter. And as you mentioned with the ship, you know, the shipping on trucks
right.
started in the last quarter. Mm-hmm. The big tariff started September 28th.
Right. So late 2018, the effects start to roll out. And here we are in 2019 in the first quarter. And you're still having that effect. That is fixable, but it has to be done so it can be turned around.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on trip planning. Do you realize how much your truck idles during a year? A truck can go through about a gallon of fuel per hour of idling. Studies have shown that long-haul tractor trailers idle about 1,830 hours a year. That's a lot of fuel use, but drivers know idling is essential to regulate the cab for sleeping. Consider using an auxiliary power unit to increase driver comfort and reduce idle time. Remember that some jurisdictions around the country have regulations that limit trucks' idling time. Fines can reach into the thousands of dollars. Before heading out on your trip, keep an updated list of state and local idling regulations handy in your cab. There are more than 65 of them right now, and it's challenging to know them all. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Thank you so much for being here this morning, as always, here for the Wednesday show. Coming up, well, the Mueller report will be released on Thursday. This is going to be interesting.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see. Well, first of all, we know where the media is going to go. See, proof that he colluded with the Russians. Who will be the first to, now they've already done it. Who was it the other day calling him, he's acting as the leader of Russia. One of the candidates, the anti-gunner.
Swalwell.
Swalwell said it. He's acting as the leader of Russia. So he's already the president of Russia. How much further will they go in their rhetoric? Who knows?
Well, that's really, I'm telling you, that's an amazing feat by Trump, though.
Yeah, no, he won two elections.
Not only did he win the presidency of the United States, but he also controls Russia. He's
right,
now the president of Russia.
Yeah, I think, I think that's a pretty admirable. Those are skills, man. So
those are definitely negotiating skills.
Oh, yeah.
I'm the leader of Russia, too.
Yeah.
I took over Russia.
I mean, what do you want? He's running two countries. He's a very busy guy.
Swalwell, I mean, what an... Come on. I mean,
yeah, it's just moronic.
It's just...
But I also wonder the effect of going into Easter weekend. So you have it released Thursday morning. Now, Thursday is going to be very vibrant. It'll be all over. But, Good Friday starts a different tone, and I think the news cycle, there is an effect there. Not that they won't have their coverage of it, but our attention to it changes on Easter weekend. So I wonder what it is going into next week. Do they save their energy for next week and come back Monday and Tuesday of next week with more discussions about it? I just don't know where there is to go.
Well, the only thing, the collusion thing is dead.
Mm-hmm.
The collusion is dead.
Right.
The only thing they're trying to hang their hat on is some form of obstruction of justice. Unless there's new information that's being released, unless it's something that we don't know about. And there's no indication to believe that, because Barr noted that the keys to obstruction of justice, even in his four-page letter, is mostly what Trump said publicly.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
So you're not going to be able to make it. If that's all it is, that's dead in a week.
Yeah.
That's gone.
Yeah.
And then the focus is on what? There's only one focus then at that particular point.
Mm.
What do you think? Adam Schiff's not going to come up with anything. That's dead. Because he can't get anywhere close to what Mueller was able to do. And so the focus is going to be Barr looking into the FBI, the Department of Justice, the intelligence agencies, the Inspector General's report, and Lindsey Graham with the House Judiciary Committee. I think over the next 6 months to a year, probably the next 6 months especially, the focus will be on what happened in the Obama administration. Because there's nothing left on collusion.
Yeah. I just don't know where else they could take it. There's not going to be any new information found. I mean, they'll go to, something that you predicted, and, it's not a stretch by any means, and that is, well, there's so much that is redacted that we didn't get. We can't possibly learn everything. We need the full report.
And they may be able to sit there in their own little safe spaces, mm-hmm, and have... And say that to each other, but that isn't going to resonate with the independent electorate that will decide the election next year.
No, it's not.
It will be viewed as, look, stop it.
I don't know that any of it does. I think it's, they've kind of played it out with the American audience. I think they played it out with the far left. And because I think it's, the possibilities are, there's a few possibilities in terms of the mindset. The reception by the far left, rank and file, looking at it going, okay, you guys clearly, Mueller was clearly not good enough to get it done. You guys aren't good enough to get it done. This is why we don't support you.
Yeah, but AOC's still talking about impeachment, but does it have anything to do with collusion?
No, it has to do with we want him out.
Exactly.
So I don't know that this whole Russia thing has any energy behind it.
On the whole Mueller investigation, there was an op-ed piece that was written by a former newspaper editor who wrote, admit it, Fox News has been right all along. It was in the Washington Post. We'll have part of that coming up here in just a couple of moments. There's something else I wanted to bring up, and I forgot what it was now. I really forgot what it was.
Yeah.
It had to be so. Oh.
What?
The accusations that the left was making against the right on the cathedral burning.
Yeah.
Where they were trying to make this case that was just ridiculous, that the right was blaming it on Muslims.
Yeah, right.
Which wasn't the case. They actually went after Ben Shapiro went nuts.
Yeah.
Because wait till I read you what they wrote about our colleague Ben Shapiro talking about the history behind the cathedral. It's just mind-boggling how far they'll go. We'll get to that coming up.
Listening to Red Eye Radio from the Pilot Flying J Studios.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90-RED-EYE. If you would like to get in, we would love hear from you. Yeah, here is a op-ed piece that was written by former Hillsborough, Ohio newspaper editor Gary Abernathy. The title was, Admit It, Fox News Has Been Right All Along. Now, he stated, he goes, yes, Fox News is an echo chamber for the right, but no more than CNN and MSNBC are for the left as far as conservatives are concerned. To be fair, when a Democrat is in the White House, a network switch places with Fox News criticizing every move and MSNBC and CNN defending the Oval Office fortress. However, he continues, Fox News was right and the others were wrong. For at least 2 years, MSNBC and CNN devoted hour upon hour, day after day, to promoting the narrative that Trump colluded with the Russians and that special counsel Robert Mueller was going to prove it. That turned out to be wrong. Along with defending Trump, Fox News hosts such as Tucker Carlson, Laura Ingraham, and especially Sean Hannity have been slammed for clamoring for an investigation of the investigators, aligning themselves with the president's claim of a politically motivated witch hunt. The columnist added, most of the media portrayed such accusations as preposterous, designed merely to divert attention from Trump's alleged misdeeds. Of course, he continued, Democrats and many in the media immediately blasted Barr for carrying Trump's water, and the attorney general is being cast by the liberal cable channels and others as an unscrupulous political hack attached to the president's leash and the opposite of a mostly flattering profile of the new attorney general offered by the Washington Post that described Barr as, quote, less politically minded than his predecessors. But now, Abernathy stated, these accusations represent an unlikely turn of events for a 68-year-old professional with an impeccable record and a career more behind him than in front of him. Meanwhile, even regular viewers of CNN and MSNBC must certainly recognize the straws being grasped to justify sticking with the conspiracy theory that has largely been debunked, although the expected release of the Mueller report this week will probably provide just enough juice for one last effort. It would behoove serious journalists to put aside their political biases and delve into a story that might actually be worthy of Watergate comparisons, even if it includes the painful admission that Fox News has been right all along, he concluded. Part of that analysis also, but not the quotes, but part of the analysis there from newsbusters.org.
Yeah, I think the American public right now, again, it's, you know, we have a wide spectrum of opinions out there as to how this happened, what actually happened, and what the result is of the investigation. And I think you probably have some out there that are on the far left saying, well, you know what? You have Mueller had his chance and he didn't get the job done. The Democrats aren't going to ever be able to oust Trump. We're not going to get him impeached. Our only hope is 2020. I just don't know that there's any energy behind this whole Mueller thing. I really think it has played itself out. First of all, because it went so long. And B, because the conclusion was, and they were really, the media was building it up, as they point out here, to be this big crescendo of indictments coming down and the perp walks beginning. Didn't happen.
Well, we've said all along, the embarrassing part of the media is they're not supposed to be biased. When you look at the Fox News hosts that they're talking about, they're paid to be biased.
Right.
They're all paid to be biased. And the point that he doesn't say it, but I can make, is even the most biased pro-Trump people have been more accurate on this story and where it was going than the so-called legitimate journalists.
Right.
In the mainstream media.
Yeah.
That's the embarrassing part of it.
No, I think you're right. I mean, that's it is. And how much crow do you have to eat? How much are you going to be, how much false information are you going to be fed from what, if you're a liberal, what you consider to be the friendly media?
Well, you know, when Chris Cuomo said, was trying to make the point, well, we were just covering what they said. No, you don't. You interpret all the time, and you claim whether something is credible or not. We do it all the time. Just because a politician says something doesn't mean we believe them.
Right.
On either the right or left, if you've listened to this show. But we're still biased in our opinion. We're still opinion givers. That's what we do. Mm-hmm. We don't view ourselves as, okay, we're journalists. All we do is give the truth and not our opinion. We give our opinion.
Yep.
But it doesn't mean that we just listen to the politician and say, well, the politician said that. That's all we're reporting. No. We delve into whether it's credible or not. We don't care whether you're on the right or left. We do it. We do it all the time. If you listen to the show, we do it all the time. Because that we think that part is extremely important to say, all right, is it credible or not? Coming up, I'll talk about, you know, the candidate. And this is a great part about having so many Democrat candidates running. They all say something every day, which I think is just great because you can have a conversation on it. You know, Pete Buttigieg, as we said earlier, they claim that he's this incredibly intelligent guy. Well, he's not. He hasn't shown it. He might be intelligent. He hasn't shown it. And he talked about the fact that, you know, that attempting to say that capitalism needs to be more democratic, which means more government control. We can tear that apart. Is that actually credible? Do we just report what he says, or do you say, is that credible or not?
Right.
And that's what we'll do a little bit later on, and it's not credible. And I think people that aren't political hacks will say, well, yeah, of course, if you look at any economic system out there, capitalism is the most democratic. That's the whole point. If you don't wish to be as democratic, if you wish to be more of a socialist, admit it. But don't claim, as Buttigieg is trying to do, by saying, well, capitalism is no longer democracy, and therefore the government needs to be much more in control of it, which is more democratic. I mean, that's a load of horse manure, mm-hmm. And we all know it. And so when we looked at this all along, we said, okay, what are the questions out there? And look, the first thing was easy. Nobody could ever identify what the crime was. I mean, that was pretty obvious from day one. He colluded with the Russians to hack the election. Where? How? What's the accusation? Where does it exist? Can I find it somewhere? You don't even have an accusation yet. And 2 years, even after the Mueller report, well, now we know because, of course, with the Mueller report saying there was no collusion. So, of course, when there's no collusion, you can't come up with a specific behavior that happened at a specific time because it never existed.
Right.
And so for 2.5 years, nobody in the media and nobody in the mainstream media questioned, well, wait a minute, should we stop and wait and say there hasn't even been an accusation? What did he actually do? There's an accusation out there. Where did it come from? Well, the accusation we found out came from the dossier. The dossier that the FBI itself said was incredible, that they could never verify. And they said that all along. Well, then you have to question the allegation to begin with and the evidence that is backing up the allegation. Did they ever do that? No.
Where are the facts? Where are the facts?
Where are the facts?
The closest they get is the meeting between Don Jr. and Veselnitskaya.
You're right. They do. That's it.
And there is zero there. The media is the only one alleging that was the basis, and that was, first of all, a crime, and that's where it all began, and that's where it was orchestrated. You know, all the different variations of that entire narrative on that event. But it was nothing. Remember, Don Jr. was the when the media was threatening, it was, well, the emails, there were emails back and forth, and Don Jr. went online and said, here's your emails. Here's the emails I got leading up to it. You want to see it? The entire string. There you go.
Yep. And if you believe that that is the collusion with the Russians, then Hillary should be in jail.
Oh, no doubt.
And members of the DNC should be, because we know by that definition, if that's to Democrats collusion, we know that Hillary did a lot worse, because we actually can connect the dots to the DNC and Hillary Clinton paying campaign money that went to get propaganda disinformation from the Russians that was used to try to destroy the Trump campaign, but it was too late. So they tried to destroy the legitimacy of a legit presidential election in 2016.
Right. Bogus, false information. By the way, if you need any more encouragement, or I guess convincing that the dossier was filled with bogus information, ask yourself this. If it weren't, do you think we'd be hearing the end of it? I mean, the information that was in the dossier, think about that. If there were something to it, if it were legitimate, Adam Schiff and the entire Democratic Party every single day would be parading that dossier and its content around.
Mm-hmm.
And what did they do instead? Oh, no, 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 no. The dossier really wasn't, you know, a big part of petitioning for the warrant. That wasn't a big... Remember, they tried to dismiss it themselves.
Right. Why
would you do that?
And the investigation was started because Papadopoulos, who to the president was like a teller at a bank, and the Fed's going after the CEO, so they're looking at a teller that has no relationship to the CEO of a bank, never has met the CEO of the bank, like Papadopoulos to Trump, yet he is the one that they used to start an investigation into the president?
Yeah.
And didn't tell the president that a low-level operative who was a volunteer claims he's communicating with the Russians and you should do something about it? Please, don't insult our intelligence.
Don't insult your own intelligence.
Yeah.
Because
the media's claiming they did their homework.
That was legit. Yeah.
Right.
If you believe that was legit, then maybe you should be doing something else for a living. It's just, but the insanity of it all, what everybody knows to be the truth, what everybody knows is what? This was all built on zero. It was built only on a false narrative.
Whether there were any illegalities or not, I can make this completely safe, not having about 95% of the dots connected. Those inside of the Obama administration wanted to do everything to delegitimize the Donald Trump winning the 2016 election. Mm-hmm. And they were willing to use disinformation and propaganda from Russia to do it.
Yep.
Whether any laws were broken or not, that I can safely say is the truth. Peter Strzok emails and Lisa Page emails prove that.
Yep.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. We'll get some of your calls and comments coming up following the top of the hour. Plus, I love the fact that the Democrat candidates are talking because it gives us great opportunity to talk about different things. One thing coming up, capitalism seems to be a frequent criticism of the Democrats who claim that they want more democracy in capitalism by government controlling capitalism more. And you get more democracy in capitalism by government regulating it more.
Okay.
You get more democracy in capitalism by applying socialist principles of regulating the control of capital.
Okay.
Have I repeated it enough in different ways to make the point? Maybe I'm done. Maybe I don't have to bring this up following the top of the hour. Maybe the point's already been made.
Well, you know, what's interesting is that the tone is very different, but they always go at capitalism, you know, after the recession or during the recession. See, capitalism doesn't work. You need big government. Now it's, see, capitalism is working, but you need big government to come in and spread the wealth that's being created.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thank you so much for being here this morning. Just one more day before the Mueller report is released.
I don't even have my Mueller report tree up yet. Haven't done my Mueller report shopping, none of it. Wouldn't it be funny? It's not going to happen. Wouldn't it be funny if Nadler looked at it and went, like he had to respond the other day to Candace Owens, where he just kind of shrugged his shoulders and sat back. And they went on about their business. Oh, okay. All right, fine. Well, thanks for the report. And then move on. That's not going to happen. But it would be my reaction because, all right, what are you hoping from it? The only thing they really have is the only thing they've had all along. The question, the cloud of doubt over the president's head. Make him look like a shady guy. Make him look like somebody who is, remember, who was it that said it? This is what Watergate feels like. No. If Lindsey Graham and other Republicans have their way, I think we'll know what Watergate looks like. But it is that cloud of doubt. It's the only thing they had, and they knew the media was going to carry it for them. They knew that if they just float it, if they just leak this and leak that. And by the way, how many of the leaks weren't actually accurate. I'd love to go back. Has anyone done a count on the leaks that weren't accurate? I mean, Comey was still in office when some of those false leaks came out. Right. Well, on the whole, yes. Right?
Yes.
But how many? I would love to see a number as to how many it was. How many major stories by so-called major publications that were false, that were based on leaks?
I guess the question that I have, because the only thing that's going to come out of this is the obstruction of justice, which is going to go nowhere, because from what it seems to be, from what we know, unless there's some new information out there, but again, I'm going from what Barr actually wrote, that, right. Well, no, the obstruction of justice is based on the things that he has said publicly. Well, we all know what those things are. And those don't rise to obstruction of justice. So all you're going to do is have a debate of whether we should change the law of obstruction of justice, which will go away by the end of, by, I don't know, Monday or Tuesday of next week. What I wonder is, where do the Democrats go next? Because the whole thing has been, over the last 2.5 years, the big cloud over Trump's head that they believe that they have been successful in keeping there is the suspicion that Trump colluded with the Russians. Well, that's gone. Where do they go?
Yeah, what's next?
Where do they go next? It has been the most effective thing. It has been false, but it's been the most effective political tool that they've been able to use to create suspicion to the American public about the president, and now it's gone, and now the opposite is going to start happening as the Inspector General's report is going to come out, where you had Mark Meadows saying that they believe there's going to be criminal referrals coming from the Inspector General. There's criminal referrals coming from the House Intelligence Committee. There is the investigation going on by the Senate Judiciary Committee and Lindsey Graham. And so you have all these things now that are going to be hitting from, and Barr's own internal team investigating what happened and how did this whole thing of spying on the Trump campaign happen. The entire narrative over the next 6 months to a year, depending on how long this goes before, well, it would be longer, because if there are any indictments that come down, that would take us right into election time. And so right. where do the Democrats go next on Trump? You've called him Nazi. That doesn't stick. Americans know he's not a Nazi. Right?
Yep.
I mean, do you go now? I mean, is that why Swalwell went from Nazi to the fact that he's like the Russian leader?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, is that why? I mean, you're going to hear more insanity coming up. I mean, Ocasio-Cortez the last couple of days has been talking about impeachment, but can't articulate why, except he's unfit to serve.
Well, did Swalwell think to himself, you know, millennials really don't know history, so Nazi, not so much. Let's just make him look like the leader of Russia. For this generation, since they're so ignorant on world history, just say leader of Russia. And that will be bad enough. I honestly believe that it is played out. It is played out, I think, with the American people. I think it's played out for many on the left, not because they believed all along that they believe now that Trump is innocent, but that it's going nowhere.
Well, you're going to have to start talking about the issues now. Where do they go on the issues? They haven't had to talk about the issues for the last couple of years because it's all been about the fact that Trump is a traitor to the United States. He committed treason.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Well, some of the attorneys thought that he committed, by expanding the obstruction of justice law, that they believe committed obstruction of justice for a crime that never happened. Yeah, okay, go with that. See how long that goes.
Yeah.
Okay, see how long that. And so for me, I just wonder, we're in fascinating times because where are they going to go next? You've got the feud going on right now between Nancy Pelosi and Ocasio-Cortez. You have that debate going on. It's going to be fascinating now that this will, I believe, in the next week, unless there's new information out there, which we, from what I know, we have all the information.
Mm-hmm.
There is nothing new on the obstruction thing because right. As Barr said, well, the obstruction is based on what Trump said. He had that in the 4-page letter, what Trump said publicly. Well, we all know what Trump said publicly. That's nothing has been hidden on that. So there can't be anything new there. And so the only place you can go at this point that dies, we are in uncharted territories. We've never been at a time in the Trump presidency when the big hammer that the Democrats had over him to create suspicion was that he was a Russian agent.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now that's gone. What do they go on? Is it going to be taxes? Taxes didn't matter in the campaign over 2 years ago.
No.
Nobody got now. Yeah, the majority of Americans wish that he would show his taxes, but enough were willing to vote for him. And if you look at the polling right now, and if you look at some of the, if the economy stays the same, the economic models, as we've heard over the last couple of weeks, Trump wins.
Yeah.
And so where do they go on the issues of can they, once you have attempted to demean somebody's character and have been unsuccessful in politics for 2 years, remember, they called him a traitor, that he was a Russian agent. He committed treason. He doesn't care about America. He cares about Russia. Meanwhile, he's having his rallies, and everybody's saying he's a true patriot. So, So, I mean,
right.
But you know, when it's amazing to see that.
Yeah.
I mean, when just in the political process, separate yourself from it. Don't take sides, and just say, if you're an alien looking down, you're saying, that's incredible. To half the country, they believe he's a traitor. The other half believe he's a true patriot. Well, we now know he's not a traitor. So, where do you go with that? And where do you go? How does that? This is a great question that's the unknown. How does this suppress the excitement of the Democrat base? I'm talking about the Democrat voter. If you don't have that anymore, if that's gone, if you have spent, think about the energy that you have to put forward to believe that somebody has committed treason. I mean, there's a lot of energy. There's a lot of passion there. There's a lot of hate there. Well, the official investigation says no. There is no evidence that there's no evidence of no wrong of no illegalities. There is no even evidence of any type of legal cooperation with the Russians to do anything. So you've got nothing there. You lose that completely. How does that suppress the voting excitement of the Democrat base over the next year? Because they don't really seem. Think about this. It doesn't seem like they're to the point, okay, Trump's gone, we need this new revolution of our new young blood, because none of the new young blood have jumped to the forefront. It's still Biden and Sanders.
Well, it's interesting that you have Omar AOC that can win in their districts, right? How wide can that appeal go? It's the loudest part. It is the face right now of the party because the media focuses there. Sorry, Democrats, but that's what you have.
You created that. It was not the right that created AOC and Omar. It was the, we only started talking about AOC and Omar. Why? The constant interviews on CNN, MSNBC.
Never ending.
The great write-ups, the what they would consider the great write-ups in many mainstream publications and newspapers out there highlighting everything about her. So, of course, conservatives are going to say, okay. And then what really solidified it was the support of all the presidential candidates at that time to her Green New Deal.
Right.
And then at that point, it was like, okay, this is somebody then who is now the anti-intellectual force you know, and mindset of the Democrat Party right now. And to prove that, Nancy Pelosi can't stop talking about her the last couple of days, trying to demean her in a very subtle way, because there's that split right there in the Democrat Party. So where do they go now that they can't unite behind Trump as a traitor?
Right. And how do they pull that together? Do they even care about the old thing, for the good of the party? Does that matter?
I don't think so. No, not when AOC will dismiss. Hang on, we'll see if we can get to him. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So where do you go to next? You see the Democratic candidates trying to find a way of where to go. I want to play this audio cut from CNN. This is CNN. CNN's New Day. And this is Pete Buttigieg talking about socialism versus capitalism. Here we go.
I think the reason we're having this argument over socialism and capitalism is that capitalism has let a lot of people down. I guess what I'm out there to say is that it doesn't have to be so. I believe in democratic capitalism, but the Democratic Party is extremely important. I think during this Cold War, there was this assumption that capitalism and democracy were almost the same thing, that if you were for capitalism, you're also for democracy. Right now, we actually see democracy and capitalism coming into tension. It was very alarming to hear recently that one of the president's economic advisors said that between capitalism and democracy, he would choose capitalism. I would say the reverse ought to be true, that at the end of the day, we prioritize democracy. And, you know, having that framework of a rule of law, of fairness, is actually what it takes for markets to work.
Can I just...
Look, don't lie. You don't want more democracy. You want more socialism.
Right.
You want economic and you want governmental socialism. You're not promoting democracy. This is the big lie. There is nothing more democratic than capitalism. And capitalism comprises what? Voluntary parties cooperating with each other via contracts. Those contracts are enforced by the government and are necessary for capitalism. That's it. Willing parties voluntarily cooperating with each other. You cannot get more democratic than that. When a person comes in and says, well, because of your cooperation, I feel it's not fair to that person over there. Therefore, the government should come in and take some of your property and give it to that person. You may believe it's fair, but it is anything but democratic. At that point, when your property is not yours, that the government determines not to pay for what the necessary services are for government, but when a politician comes in, or a government comes in and states that it is our job to provide economic fairness to everyone by redistributing the income, that is the opposite of democracy. That is a politically socialist state. It's economically socialistic and politically socialist. It is not democratic. We've said this many times before with the socialists out there, including Buttigieg. They have to lie. They have to change the definition of terms. They cannot be honest, because if they're honest, they have to use words and phrases that they know will hurt them get elected. So they lie to the American public and they tell them that democracy is what socialism is.
Well, and that's the big lie has always been that it is. For the people, socialism, it's for the worker. Now it's for the people. And so now to try and say, well, democracy is if you think about it, democracy includes the government taking control of the capital, the rules, and everything else. That's, I guess, the next natural step, right?
It's the next natural step. That's how you bring in socialism. You claim that socialism is democratic.
Right. That it's, that this is not just for the people, but it's also
right.
because the people chose this, the people want it this way, and that the people have control. But it's not.
No, it's not.
It's not at all.
It's socialism, because in a, and I'm talking about under the umbrella of democracy, which mm-hmm. includes a constitutional republic, just so people understand that. Mm-hmm. We're not getting a debate between a republic and a straight democracy. We're mm-hmm. talking about a constitutional republic under that branch of a democracy. Property rights are imperative.
Here's your forecast.
There is the potential for some severe weather today in the southern plains, and this could be really a pounding event for Oklahoma and portions of central and southern Texas right through the middle of the state. In the summertime, you get a lot of the thunderstorms that punch up into real high layers of the atmosphere and produce explosive thunderclouds. But with this type of system, what we're looking at is cold air from the north wrapping around out of Canada and spilling into warm, moist air coming in from the Gulf. With that setup, you get the clash of air masses and a lot of instability creating the severe weather. We saw the same thing this past weekend in the Deep South. Warm air from the south wrapping around in with the colder air from the north, and the result were some damaging tornadoes. In fact, 8 people lost their lives this past weekend in tornadoes that went through the Deep South. We'll be watching this one, part of your national weather forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
You're listening to Red Eye Radio from the Pilot Flying J Studios. Patriarchy, oppression, and injustice. Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE, if you'd like to get in. Part of the conversation we've had over the years, Eric, is how the Democrats always evolve on the usage of phrases and words in order to make it more palatable.
Mm-hmm.
Either they realize they can't sell what they're trying to sell with the words or phrases that they're using, and so they need to come up with new ones, or because they've used a word or phrase that has been torn apart by the other side, they eventually realize that in their focus groups it's working against them, and therefore they have to change it. Some examples we have seen, global warming to climate change, to climate chaos for a while, but then back to climate change because it encompasses everything. They found that using global warming made their argument weak, and so they moved on to a different phrase. Illegal immigration probably was the greatest evolution of phrases and words, which started out with illegal alien and then went to illegal immigrant and then went to undocumented worker, which then went to just an immigrant.
Mm-hmm.
So you couldn't separate the two. So they would say, you're against immigration. No, I'm against illegal immigration, which is being against immigration. No, it's not. Legal immigration and illegal. And so they did that in order to muddy the waters, even to the point of temporarily using the phrase temporarily displaced worker was being used. Temporary displaced traveler mm-hmm. was actually used for a short time in California
yeah.
in order to do what? In order to take you further and further from the truth, because what you found out is that you couldn't sell the truth to the people that you expected to vote for you, so you have to change your terminology. I've noticed this here in the last couple of weeks. I've noticed it in just the last week with Nancy Pelosi now coming out and saying, we're not a socialist party. We're not a socialist party. We're not a socialist party. Early on, probably about 4 or 5 months ago, you had Democrats proudly talking about socialism. And then what did it become here over the last month and a half or so? It became Democrat socialism, right? Mm-hmm. We need more Democrat socialism, not the regular socialism, but Democrat socialism. Now, as you see, Buttigieg, what he is using is now not Democrat socialism. What we need to have now is democratic capitalism.
Yeah.
It's the ever-evolving changing of words which gets you further from the actual truth to an outright lie. And that's where Buttigieg got to on CNN, where he's attempting to promote the fact that more government involvement in capitalism is actually more democracy in capitalism. You cannot make that intellectual point. It is dishonest. It is a lie to say that more government involvement in capitalism is more democrat, or is more democracy. It's not. It's more economic socialism and political socialism, which is government controlling more of the capital or more of the means of production. That is never more democrat or more democratic. It may be more democrat, but it's not more democratic. And that's what Buttigieg is trying to sell. And that is intellectually dishonest, which is a nice word that where a lie evolved into from a lie into intellectually dishonest.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And it is a it clearly is the tactic. And in a good economy, while there are some slowdowns over the last few months, and we've talked about those. Generally speaking, the economy, we're not in a recession, so it's not a bad economy. The Democrats really don't have any other way to do it. They have to, what they have to tell you is, well, but we are better, the government is better at controlling it. Now, after the recession, they actually got a lot of energy built behind that, where people thought, oh, yeah, I want more government. I want bigger government. I don't want an intrusive government, but I want a bigger government. And capitalism got it wrong. Now, it's, while they don't have any event really to point at, or because we've had no recent recession, they're just pointing in general saying, yeah, we need to be in control of that, but make it sound like you're in control of it, because it's part of democracy. See, it's the people controlling it. It's not bureaucrats. It's not elected officials.
Oh, yes, it is.
Of course it is. Of course it is.
It's the guy. And it doesn't matter whether the tyranny of the majority takes away the rights of the minority through popular vote or through a totalitarian government. The reason that our constitutional republic was set up was to prevent that from happening, because the tyranny to the minority is the same if it comes from the majority through representation or through a dictatorship.
Yeah.
There is no difference to the tyranny that is inflicted on the minority isn't changed because it comes from a majority versus a dictatorship.
Right.
And so that's the intellectual dishonesty. But what it must show is, though, because of the movement from just a few months ago, proudly using socialist, to then the term democratic socialist has come up to the last few days, where I've noticed Buttigieg and others have been using, well, what we need now is, you know, capitalism is working. What we need more is more Democrat capitalism, which they mean as, and as he said, well, you know, we need more fairness. Well, as soon as you hear that word fairness in capitalism, therefore we need to be more Democrat. I mean, those are the key words of a socialist,
right,
who says, well, no, to make it more Democrat, we need to make things more fair by taking property from some and giving it to others. Well, that's actually the definition of socialism.
Right.
That's controlling the means of production and controlling capital. Controlling more of the capital for what the government or somebody else or what the majority perceives as fairness by taking money from some and giving it to others. And by the way, to the point of being unprecedented now, where it's not just if you're poor. It's not just if you're destitute and on welfare and need it. Now it's like, let's give 24,000 dollars a year to any family out there. Well, that money has to come from somewhere. And by the way, the big lie, there's two big lies. Well, there's a couple more lies that have been told besides Buttigieg and his lies. And the first lie is that the rich can pay for it. And the second lie when it comes, for example, for health care is what Bernie Sanders was trying to sell yesterday, that, you know, you will actually, for the average person, what they're spending on health care today will actually spend less and get better health care through a government single-payer system. That is an out-and-out right lie. Out-and-out right lie. You will not get the same service for the same money under a single-payer system controlled by a monopoly government. It doesn't work that way.
Nope.
And why don't you get the same service? Because waiting times go up drastically, and when it comes to health care, part of the service of health care is it's health care is not like a television. I can get a new television today or next year. Health care, if I need an operation, I need it today, not 6 months from now. That's the difference. It's a difference in the product that is being sold. And so timely care is important care. And Canada, for example, just can't get over it. Canada just can't. They're still at 19, I think 19. They've actually gone up. And they've spent billions trying to bring it down. It's tough to bring it down when you've got a monopoly system or close to a monopoly system.
Right.
Because monopolies can never deliver it to you. And they made the great point. They said, look, the doctors and hospitals, the people that actually do the work are great in Canada. Just another article written by another Canadian yesterday saying, look, our doctors are great. Our medical care is actually great. Well, except if you really, really need the high technology. Mm. But the fact is you're going to have waiting time. Look at the example. They did an article yesterday on the number of MRI machines as compared to the United States. When you see the number of MRI machines in the United States, you know why you can get an MRI much quicker in the United States than you can in Canada. Because there's a huge waiting line. Because why? They can't afford as many MRI machines. And I've told the story before about a distant relative of mine who would be dead under the Canadian healthcare system. Had a benign, this goes back about 20 years ago, but still had a benign brain tumor that they use, I believe it's the Gamma Knife, that was regular. I mean, it was normal procedure here in the United States. Didn't have it. Told him, nothing we can do. Hmm. He had to come. They suggested go to the U.S. to get the care. He'd be dead. Well, he was covered. He had the health insurance. And as I've said, if you want to look at the two systems and the failure of the two systems, it's very easy to point out. In the United States, you have the possibility of losing everything to save your life. You can be completely and totally bankrupt. That's about the worst that can happen to you, right?
Yeah.
You go bankrupt. That's terrible that that happens. We lost everything, but you're alive. In Canada, you're fully covered. All your assets are there. You're dead.
And it comes down to what? It comes down to the cost. The government will decide what will be afforded in the system. Not you. Not your doctor. The government will decide what is going to be handled, what treatment you will get, and when.
You know, I showed you an interesting email that I got, and I haven't got into a debate with the gentleman because it would get too personal, but he gave all his personal things of what happened in his family. I'm not going to get into it, but in his family, right, and went through all the different years and all the diseases. And it's impossible for me to comment because I don't know their finances. I don't know what they did. I don't know what they worked at. I don't know what they bought. I don't know whether they were fiscally responsible. And I'm not going to ask that question to somebody who writes to me. But the biggest thing that he pointed out was that Social Security disability failed them, and so did Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking about the fact, his whole point was that government should get more involved in it, and you and I found it amazing that, but he just admitted that both the limited government care failed his family members twice. That the current government programs that exist failed him and his family members twice, yet he wants more of it.
Right.
And you and I found that pretty unique.
Well, and that's, you know, the concern, because the question is, well, the Republicans aren't offering ideas. The Republicans have been offering ideas for years. But the latest idea that you, well, not idea, but we're seeing it actually in play right now, And one of the dynamics that that is changing is transparency in pricing for the care itself. And you see a lot of clinics that are offering up their pricing or going to more of a cash basis. Is the government going to be able to do it better than the private sector? Never.
Never.
Why is it that Medicare for All, under Bernie's plan, would require that the private sector companies, insurance companies, be gone? Because you can't allow that kind of competition in the workplace. I mean, in the marketplace. You can't. You can't allow the private sector, even though the government would control all of the regulations, inevitably, the private sector would still be competing with the government at some level. No. Squash competition altogether so that everything is under the control of the government.
Well, I always found it interesting when people say that health care is a right, yet you go back to that Supreme Court case in Canada, I believe it was in Quebec, where they found that the single-payer system violated the rights, violated the right to life of Canadian citizens because it was so bad. I always thought that was just a wonderful analogy.
Right.
When you think about it, because of the scream that healthcare is a right, yet they found out the single-payer system, the way that it was structured in Quebec, actually violated the right to life of Canadian citizens in Quebec.
Because it eliminates the right. Access.
Choices, right. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. You made a great point, Eric. We were talking about, we were comparing how the Democrats view the economy and they, you know, the corporations and things like that and free markets and capitalism to immigration. Capitalism, they always talk about you need to play by the rules, play by the rules, play by the rules, play by the rules. We need to play by the rules. We need fairness. On immigration, it's don't play by the rules.
Right.
Don't be fair. Break the law. And those who play by the rules have less of a chance of coming into the country because the demand for immigration into the country has been seriously decreased by the amount of illegal immigration that we've had. So the people around the world that have followed the rules and wish to come in, now it's harder to come into the United States than it was before.
Well, I would ask them too in this, what about the employers that aren't playing by the rules of capitalism when they hire illegals knowingly?
Yes, exactly.
What would their answer be?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.